As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today.
And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Clay Harbor.
Playing at Wembley Stadium, 90,000 sold out crowd in London. And for some reason, my heart's beating, getting out of a limo to go date some girl. I'm like, what's wrong with you?
Football analyst for Chicago Sports Network.
Former NFL player.
Not a quarterback, I'm a tight end, but I've watched a lot of tape. I've been in meeting rooms with Tom Brady. Been in meeting rooms with Drew Brees. I've been in meeting rooms with Michael Vick. Quarterbacks know what they can do and what they can't do, and I know what a quarterback can and can't do and when you're supposed to expect them to be able to be successful.
Clay Harbor with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Oh, it's a glorious day, and Clay is here in studio. What a delight. It is draft day. David wrote down his pick.
What'd I do with that?
You
okay,
wrote it down
here we
this
go.
Morning. There it is.
Ashton Jeanty, no matter what.
Yeah, that's his.
Just like the movie. You saw the movie, Clay,
yeah,
right?
I never seen Draft Day.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, it's fun.
Who let you in here then? You've never seen Draft Day?
Never seen Draft Day.
Wow.
It's good. It's a good
okay.
movie.
You'll have to see it.
Never watched it.
And it resonates with David, as you can tell. and so there is so much to talk to about this, because I think as we sit here and pick apart who's going where and how it's going to go, I think there's a certainty for the first maybe three selections, you start losing the plot around New England at four. By the time you get to Jacksonville at five, there's all sorts of weird rumors floating around. And we know, generally speaking, the names of guys, but I don't feel like this is a so-called slotted draft. Usually you get a pretty good feel. You can get on a nice roll if you're making a mock where all of a sudden you can put together 10 picks or 15 picks. Not this year.
Yeah, the whole Jacksonville thing with Ashton Jeanty doesn't make sense to me. I was talking to David about this last night in the Chicago Sports Network. Mm. Let's look at Jacksonville. They've drafted three first-round running backs in the last 8 years. They have Travis Etienne, a first-round running back, still there on his rookie contract. 2 years ago, you drafted Tank Bigsby with the first pick, second pick in the third round.
And he's
they
pretty
love
good.
Tank Bigsby. He's a good back.
Yeah.
Travis Etienne is a good back. I know James Gladstone's in there. He's younger than I am. He wants to come in and do some new things. It's not new to draft a running back first round in Jacksonville. You should build the trenches. Honestly, my take is you should get Tet McMillan, who's a big receiver. You look at the success that Trevor Lawrence had. You go back to college when he was playing with T. Higgins. He was playing with bigger receivers. He's throwing the ball to John Ross. Give him another big body receiver to line up next to Brian Thomas Jr., and I think you'll see more success from Trevor Lawrence. I understand Liam Cohen is an offensive coach coming in there, and he wants offensive weapons. I just don't think Jeanty makes sense when you have those two running backs.
So do you think that Jeanty is the key guy in the first round? You think it's Shedeur Sanders? Who is the player that once he goes and once that move is made, you're like, okay, this is when things will start to fall in place?
I think it's Jeanty. I think Shedeur Sanders, from everything I've been hearing, is a guy that's that's going to fall.
Yeah.
Like it's almost a foregone conclusion that maybe he goes 21. Maybe the Giants trade back up and from the second round into the first to get him. Maybe he goes to Cleveland in the second. But I think it's a foregone conclusion that he is not going in the first round. But then Genty, he can go anywhere, 5, 6. People are saying him to the Raiders. Do the Bears trade up and try to get ahead of these guys? Does he fall to the Bears? So I think the draft really starts with Genty. I think it's a foregone conclusion as well. You said the first three. I think four. I think we can pencil in Will Campbell to the to the Patriots.
Hmm. I guess when I look at someone like I think there's a lot of different players, but when I think about what the Bears could use, like if Mason Graham were to somehow fall, I think he's the kind of player that you look at, you could plug into the middle of your defense for 10 years. That's the kind of guy. Like I kind of, when I approached this draft initially, and that's before free agency or anything else, my thinking was always line of scrimmage, just get better at the line of scrimmage. I still feel that way. I think they've made good moves, but more stopgap moves than moves that build your football team for years to come.
I think Mason Graham does have a chance to fall. I think if he gets to 8, there's a chance at the Panthers. A friend of mine that's plugged in over there did tell me this. He said off the record that there's a chance if Mason falls to 8 that there will be a deal with the Bears. I don't know how realistic that is. But if he falls, and I think he can because you look at his traits.
Clay, off the record means not to be repeated, right? But Thank you for repeating that.
Yeah.
Not for attribution.
Right. Yeah,
that's
sorry. That's what I
that's
was.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. Wrong term used there, David.
That's a very interesting possibility.
Yeah, I think so. And I think he can fall because you look, the traits that he has, 25th percentile arm length, 21st percentile weight. He's a guy that's smaller, and a lot of these teams like guys with traits.
Yeah. I got to tell you, I think he's the kind of guy, you know, they did help themselves getting a guy that will help them in the interior of the line, but that's not a long-term thing.
No, it's not.
And he would be a guy that you could plug in to a spot like that for a lot of years to come, and then who knows? Who knows? Obviously, you need another pass rusher. You need some help on the offensive line. You're going to get a running back before you get out of this draft. I think we know, generally speaking, what the positions are. But I wonder, and I hate to say it this way, but I wonder if the coach, when he hired the defensive coordinator, promised him, we will get you a really good player.
Can you do that, though?
You can do it. You're not number 10,
right,
but you can say one of the first three picks, we're going to get you
one
something.
One of the first three makes sense.
One of the guys that you like on your defensive line.
Defensively, the only options, in my opinion, that you have Mason Graham there and Mykel Williams, David. You asked me about him yesterday, so I went good back player. And I watched some more film, some more tape on this guy. And I think it's a realistic possibility now because I watched a lot of last year's tape. So I went back 2 years before the ankle injury, and he seemed like a different player. Once again, this is a guy that can line up anywhere from a 4-eye to a 9 technique. He just fits the Dennis Allen system. He's not huge, but he has 34.5-inch arms. He's 260, 265 pounds, 6'4". So he's a bigger guy. He's not the massive guy that you see Dennis Allen liking, but he is on that bigger side. He's very quick. He's aggressive. I know he doesn't have the stats because he's on that Georgia defensive line, but he's one of those guys that he's going to cause some havoc inside. He's going to cause some havoc outside. I could see Mykel Williams happening.
I want to get your perspective. Let's go back to Genty for a second because the one thing we hear about him is that, well, you know, he broke tackles at Boise State against Mountain West Conference opposition. It's not the same as playing in the SEC. You played college football at Missouri State. You played in the NFL for a long time. You can relate to what that is like to go from a mid-major type program to against NFL competition. Are we making too much of that with Ashton Genty? Do you think that the difference is significant enough to have doubts whether or not he can succeed at the NFL level?
And I told you, David, those tackles feel a lot different on Sundays than they did on Saturday mornings going up against Illinois State, going up against North Dakota State, you know, Western Illinois. So you're not breaking some of those tackles. I can show you my college highlight film versus my NFL highlight film. There's a lot more broken tackles on my college highlight film. And he's a guy that does have the good contact balance. I think he's elusive. He's strong. He's the weight room strong. You hear about all the numbers he's putting up on the clean, on the squat, all these things he's doing. But half those tackles, the 152 missed tackles forced,
right.
You can cut that in half if he's playing in the SEC, and especially if he's playing in the NFL, because these guys are the best players in the SEC conference. They're not even guys. You're playing against guys that are going to be bagging groceries when you're playing against whoever you're going against from, you know, UNLV or San Jose State. Most of these guys aren't going to even play in the NFL. Yeah, you look good against them, but there is a difference. I'm not saying it's going to be completely different, but you're not going to get the same caliber playing you're seeing with all these great highlights.
Are you at all concerned about, like, explosiveness with a player that doesn't run or breakaway speed with a guy? And I get it. If you don't have to do it, you don't have to do it. But why don't you want to do it? Because you're hiding something? It just creates, in my mind, a hint of doubt.
How fast is Ashton Jeanty?
I'd love to know that, and I'd love to know if he's explosive as he looked in college.
No, that position matters.
Yes.
You want to get a number on how fast he is, because that is one of the positions that matters. You see Cam Scatabo, he knew he wasn't going to run well. He ran. And if you're doing this in the SEC, you're doing this in the Big 12, to me, that doesn't matter as much, because you have tape going against guys that are going to be in the league, guys that are similar to the guys you're playing against. But when you're playing in the Mountain West, you need to run. You need to have those points of contention, the speed, your jumping ability, your explosiveness. Why are you hiding that? You should want to do that to show people that you are the full service running back that you can, that you are.
The guy that I hope actually the Bears end up with is a guy who's becoming maybe the most unlikely player to fall to 10. Will Campbell is the left tackle that you could see in Chicago for the next 5 to 8 to 10 years. A fixture at a position that is a premium spot. We just talked about Mykael Williams. You talk about long arms, and arm length is an issue with Will Campbell. So whether it's with the Bears or the Patriots or whoever, how do you view that limitation based on the measurables with Will Campbell, or do you see enough on tape to think that's going to be a moot point?
Once again, typically I would say, yeah, these traits matter. And when you're in the zero percentile of wingspan, and when your arm length is in the seventh percentile, I think that matters. That's something that you can't discount. But once again, this guy started 3 years in the SEC. So this guy has got so much tape playing against the best players in the country. You can go and look at him against Georgia. You can go look at him against Alabama. You can go look at him against the best players in the country, and he never gets dominated, and he gets the job done. So for me, like you said, David, moot point. This guy is a player. He's shown it time and time again that he can play left tackle.
You can look at him playing NFL talent when he was a freshman. Like, he's played so long.
Jared Verse,
a great example. You can see him playing him when he was a freshman. It's crazy.
You mentioned Jared Verse, Clay, and I know you like Mike Green, the edge rusher from Marshall, who came there via Virginia. And yesterday we were talking about where he's going to go and what team is going to take a risk, because there are some character concerns based on his history. Right. And then you look at things on the field and you evaluate him as just a pure pass rusher. And Jared Verse is the guy that I asked you about. Could he be this year's version of Jared Verse, a guy that had all kinds of questions going into the draft? A lot of teams passed at him. Then, oh, look, he is wrecking every game plan as a rookie because he was put in the right spot and he fell to the right team. Is this conceivable for a Mike Green?
If Mike Green gets passed on, I think it's because of some of the off-field stuff.
Right.
Like, you can't watch this guy's film, and I know he's playing at Marshall. But let's take a look at his career arc. Obviously, he started early in his career, and he had to transfer because of his allegations. But he came into college as a wide receiver, moved to linebacker, moved to edge rusher. He's 6'3", 6'4", 250 pounds. The guy ran an excellent agility drills at his pro day, would have put him in the top 10 in the last 10 years for a defensive end. He is a desperate player, a physical player. He is good against the run. He's good against the pass. Not only is he a physical guy But he's the type of guy that I was talking to David that I hated blocking, the guys that were also elusive. Yeah. The guy that would come in and would give you basically a move. Like when you're blocking J.J. Watt, and I'm not saying Mike Green's J.J. Watt, completely different players, but people think J.J. Watt was good because he was so big and strong. You look at this guy, he looks like the guy from the Green Mile. You know, he looks like that's what he looks like. But this guy was so elusive, he would put a move on you like he's a receiver, jump out of the gap, get back in the gap, and next thing you know, he's behind you wrecking the play. That's why we had a rule, you got to have four hands on J.J. Watt. Playing in Jacksonville, we played against him twice every year. So Mike Green's a guy that's got the wiggle. He's going to have the ability to get out of his gap responsibility because he is so quick, he can get back into it. And those are the guys I hated playing against. You take specific steps on a reach block, the guy usually has to move with you because they don't want to get reached. Mike Green, J.J. Watt, these are guys that could move inside, then they're going to jump back outside and stay in their gap. Most coaches don't give players the opportunity to do that, but the type of athletes we're talking about here with like Green, with Watt, those guys can do it. I think Mike Green, with no allegations, is a top 10 pick for sure. Doesn't fit the Dennis Allen system at all because he's not that big, yes, bulky, tone-setting edge that he likes,
right. He likes those guys,
but
big.
This guy, to me, after Abdul Carter, I don't think it's even that much of a drop-off from Abdul Carter. That's how good his tape
wow.
is.
Walter Nolan is a guy that I think is really an interesting player because he's a little bit younger. I get it that a lot of people wonder about him and there are other issues involved, but that was like the number one player in that class coming in, and he is a seriously good football player.
Oh, Walter Nolan's great. I went out to the Senior Bowl, and one of the first guys I noticed was Walter Nolan. I remember writing down notes. I think I came on here and talked to you guys about Walter Nolan. I go, this guy is big. He's fast. He's physical. Yeah. I could see people liking Walter Nolan over Mason Graham. I mean, this guy reminds me a little bit of a poor man's Jalen Carter. Once again, I'm talking about the players that are just really twitched up, twitchy guy for being his size, super athletic. Athleticism, size, all that is much better than Mason Graham. Mason Graham's got that motor, that wrestling background where he can leverage, not the big guy. He's not going to get moved. I don't think Mason Graham's ever going to have 10 sacks. I think Walter Nolan has a chance to be a 10-sack guy from the interior, depending what you want. What's your flavor? I think there are things you can like from Walter Nolan over Mason Graham. And personally, if I was blocking both those guys, I would rather block a guy like Mason Graham than Walter Nolan, just because of all the moves and the twitchiness that Nolan has. He's just a different type player.
Molly and I both have scenarios where the Bears could take. Molly said Tyler Warren. I said Colston Loveland, depending on how the draft board falls. Those are two tight ends that I think are going to have immediate impacts in the NFL, respectively.
Different players,
different types. You played the position for a long time in the NFL. How do you view those two as prospects, and who would you rather have?
That's a tough question. So I'll go back to my time with New England. I remember I got signed by the Patriots, and one of the things I was excited about, Molly, was I'm going in there. I want to get to see how Rob Gronkowski does things, the best tight end in NFL history. And I remember first OTA sitting there diligently watching Gronk's routes. And I'm like, these routes are the same as everybody else's routes. And I go, this guy isn't fast. Sometimes he runs like he's got two left feet, you know, just a big bumbling. But he is 6'6", 6'7", 275. The guy just made plays.
Yeah.
And after the catch, he was a demon with the football in his hands. Besides the fact he could have been an all-pro tackle as a blocker. I'm just talking about receiving. Tyler Warren just makes plays. The guy, I don't know how. The guy just makes plays. He's not a guy that's going to go out there and run some crisp routes, get open. He makes plays. He is great with the ball in his hands after the catch. Colston Loveland. All right. He reminds me more of a better version route running is of a guy who played with Zach Ertz, Eric Ebron. This guy can run routes like a real wide receiver. I mean, it's incredible to see a guy his size get out of breaks the way he gets out of breaks, be able to sink his hips, catch balls. Ball skills are incredible. He is a guy that is a one-on-one nightmare. You can set him up, and you know if a linebacker's on him, you're going to Colston. If a safety's on him, you're going to Colston. He is a guy that can get open right. no matter what, and he's improving as a blocker. So you go with the football player, you can line up anywhere. The guy just makes plays. Gronk, I'm watching routes. I'm like, I can do all that. Somehow Gronk's the best tight end of all time. I'm going on The Bachelorette, okay? And then you got Colson Loveland. I mean, this guy can just run routes like crazy. So I don't know. You make your pick.
That is hysterical.
That's great analysis.
Right, we're gonna be right back. We've got Clay Harbor for the hour. It's Mully and Haw on The Score.
Clay Harbor with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We got Clay Harbor in studio with us, and we've been threatening to ask you about your own draft experience. I think if you're going to be the first overall pick, it doesn't matter whether you're going to be in the first round, in the seventh round of a draft. I think everybody I know that ever got drafted, it stands out. It's an incredible personal experience and triumph of sorts, even if you're not in New York as the celebrated person that's getting picked or the guy that has to wait all day. Yeah. Either one.
Yeah. My experience was interesting. I was telling David a little about it last night on the Chicago Sports Network before he went on. I'm from Dwight, Illinois. I don't know if any of the listeners know where that's at, Mully, but this is a town about 80 miles south of here. It's in the middle of the country, the cornfields, right? I was the Jackie Robinson of Dwight, Illinois. He broke the color barrier there. A bunch of farmers. So I thought it was LeBron James growing up, but literally thought it was.
And he can still dunk.
Yeah, I can. But when it came out that I was getting drafted, I was at my house, and some of the townspeople kept showing up. Be like, hey, man, you get drafted yet? And I'm like, no, can you like not show up here? Maybe after I'm, hey man, you get drafted. So all this, so I had to go to we don't even have a hotel. We got a motel. So I go with my brothers and my dad to the local motel and I sit it out there. I was hoping for day two, didn't get drafted on day two in the third round, end up going fourth round on day three. And I remember getting the call, it's Andy Reid. And I answer the phone, he's like, hello, is this Clay? I'm like, yeah. He's like, this is Coach Reid. We're going to take you here in the fourth round. I'll give you to our offensive coordinator, Marty Mordenwig. And I was just like, you know, we start celebrating. We popped some champagne and, you know, had a little draft party. And then back then, the day later, you're getting the playbook delivered to you the next day and the tight end coach is calling you and you're starting to study and go over the playbook right. with the coach the next day, because that following week, it was like 3 days, we had a rookie mini camp. So there wasn't much time to celebrate. Great time, great experience. And I went to my local bar in Dwight. There was only one. And the townspeople showed up and we celebrated. And it was a really fun experience I'll never forget, you know, for a small town kid to, you know, get drafted.
Oh, so awesome. When you talk about getting the playbook shipped to you the next day and just immediately immersing yourself into all things NFL, from the verbiage to just everything that comes into being a professional football player now, do you factor that into when you're evaluating some of these guys and how quickly they can be successful? Does that even register? Because there's a lot that goes into making that next step that sometimes we take for granted.
Oh, yeah, a ton of this stuff. When you're going to these pre-draft visits, when you're getting these visits to the combine, they're trying to get inside your brain. Right. When they come to your school, they're trying to figure out if you can learn a playbook. They don't want some guy that can, you know, play on the field, but their offense was very simplistic. You with an NFL offense, I was talking to David against about this last night as well, that playbook, that thing looks like, I mean, looks like the Bible. It is thick. It is big. College playbook, you have certain rules for plays. They call a play, you know what you're doing. It might be a read. But in the NFL, you got a lot of just gotta knows, and you got a lot of verbiage in each play. So it's completely different. It takes a while to learn. That's why if you're not like the wide tight end that kind of stays to the strength, if you're an F, if you're a slot receiver, then you have to know how to learn these playbooks. And just real quick, that takes me back to Travis Hunter, for him, people are talking about physically playing both sides of the ball.
Yeah,
for you to be able to learn an offense and a defense in your first year at those positions where you got to know them, I'm like, this guy has to be one of the most intelligent players in the history of football. It takes so much time to learn one, and you don't feel comfortable for a while to learn two?
Well, the problem for him is that he has to be in all the defensive meetings if he's going to play corner. So you almost have to make him a corner who has a number of plays he can run on offense, but people believe he might be more dangerous and more dynamic as a receiver than as a corner. And I think the number of plays is huge for trying to – it doesn't matter whether he's in shape or anything else. I mean, how can you actually be on the football field for 100 bloody plays? I just wouldn't see it happening for anybody.
Man, I had some plays. I had some games where I'd play 20 snaps and I'd leave there feeling like I played 100.
Yeah.
I don't understand how you're going to play 100 snaps. And then some of this was back in the day when you're running kickoff and we were kickoff return. We literally had a wedge where we'd interlock arms.
Yeah, that's
you interlock arms and the returner catches the ball and says go, and then you just go and run into to a bunch of guys running towards you,
including a wedge buster, over the top and clean out whenever he could.
Absolutely. So they've taken that out, but still, 100 plays in an NFL football game is a lot.
Let's go back to the Bears for a second. There's that stat that is out there. I think Jake Butt, as the one who did some research here, that Ryan Poles, every first or second round pick that he has made have been a guy who took a top 30 visit to Hallis Hall.
Mm.
And so you look at that list and Genty's on it, Hampton's on it, Tyler Warren, Will Campbell, Josh Connerly Jr., the guy from Oregon who you like, Clay, they have been on that list. Do you put much stock into that? Is it coincidence or design? Do you think that that's been the case with the first and second round picks?
I think it's design, because you hear Poles talk over and over again about the culture and how do you get to know a guy to see if he fits your culture. You can't just go visit him here and there and take a couple guys. You got to bring him into your building and see how he responds to your training staff, see how he responds to your strength staff, see how he responds to your pro personnel guy, your scouts, everybody, the janitor, the cafeteria. So.
Yep.
I think there's something to that. If Poles is seriously considering this guy, he wants to see how his culture fits. If it doesn't, maybe takes him off the board. So I think there's something to it. This year, I don't know if it fits because of the players that he invited in. Some of them might not even be there. We got Genty Campbell. Tyler Warren was there. So maybe that's a tell that maybe Tyler Warren's on the board?
Hmm. Loveland wasn't, though. Loveland wasn't.
No.
He never got to Hallis Hall.
They could still take him.
But Jake Butt did also say, he's like, a guy like Colson Loveland, Mason Graham, Wilkie. He goes, these guys are guys that you make a call to Jim Harbaugh. They don't party. They don't. Right. They get good grades. They are all football. And they are guys that you do not have to check a box on.
We were talking earlier, Clay, about this idea, too, that so many of these players have transferred or with the portal, with NIL. So many players have moved from one place to another that you get a sense of the schools that are recruiting them, not just out of high school, but out of college. You get a sense of what those conversations were like and what they think of a guy that has moved from one place to another. So you got to do a lot of homework, but you get all the information that a guy created at his first school, plus all the information you get from someone that was brought in somewhere else. And you got a lot of guys that have a lot of tape playing at different levels, and that can also aid you as you try to figure out what a player is.
Absolutely. Now you know how to pick up a playbook. So that's something that's huge. And we obviously talk about the first-round pick, Cam Ward. He goes to Incarnate Word. He goes to Wash U.
Right.
And then he goes to Miami, and he's excelled at each place. He's picked up the playbook at each place and came out hot. So that tells me this guy knows how to pick up a playbook. Some guys don't. You're in the same playbook for 4 years. It gets kind of easy. It gets kind of repetitive. But now you know this guy knows how to prepare and pick up a book, and he can be successful in different types of systems.
Who do you think is going to be the most overdrafted player tonight? The guy who you get you get a glimpse of him being introduced, going up to the podium, hugging Roger Goodell, and you think, wow, that's way too high.
I think it might be Armand Membu. I think Membu is a freak athlete. You look at his combine stuff, his RAS, RAS score was off the charts. But when I watched his film, he's got a lot of cleaning up to do, and he is a right tackle. He played 30 games in college. All 30 games were at right tackle, so he's going to play right tackle. And I know Ryan Pohl said that, yeah, we like Darnell. We saw him at left tackle, and we thought he could play both. That's part of the value why we drafted him. I doubt that. You're not going to move Darnell right over to left tackle to draft Membu, but I understand why you say it, because if a team likes Membu, they think the Bears, Membu falls. They think the Bears going to take Membu. Maybe you want to trade up or something. I get the gamesmanship there, but for me, he is a boom or bust guy. Freak athlete. Haven't seen it yet. He could end up good, but he could end up a guy that we're like, okay, this didn't make any sense.
I am curious when you talk about getting the playbook from Andy Reid. I knew a lot of people who worked in Philadelphia when Reid was in Philadelphia, and they said that his playbook – he made a transition from being a, you know, so-called West Coast offense guy to more or less a play caller guy, a guy that just collected plays and would, and it was like, as you describe it, as a Bible. But a lot of that were different ideas that he kind of patched together in the loosely based West Coast offense. It shifted while he was there, and he no longer really runs a West Coast offense. He puts together plays, and he likes everyone to contribute, and they put together tons of plays. Did you notice that when you went through the different types of plays that you were running? I know they're all variations of different things, but it's not just a West Coast offense.
No, and that's one thing I was talking to David about last night is there were some things there that were just outliers. Like, I'm a guy that likes a rule, right? You run a route. If it's – you have routes in certain formation groups. Say you have a double go, right? 363, double go, X flare, whatever. A double usually means that you have a middle read. And a middle read, if you're a tight end, means several different things. If it's man, you're running a man basic route, which is basically a 10 and in. If it's zone, you're running a stop route in the open hole. If it's too high zone, you're taking the middle, which means you're running through the middle. So you could run a bunch of different stuff on one route. There's a rule set to that. You would find that in some offenses. And Philadelphia didn't find much of that. They had figured out the plays that they wanted and the exact play they wanted you to run. So it took a while as a young guy for me to come in to learn that. And obviously, when you're younger, it's more difficult to learn the plays. After you got a little bit of experience in that, I became very good at learning a playbook, became one of the things I could count on that set me apart from other guys. You need a guy in the middle of the season, I'm your guy, fly me in, I'll learn that playbook by next week, and I'll go on the field and play. When I got cut by the Patriots, I'm on the field with the Lions the very next week and had a solid game, had a couple catches. So that was something that I prided myself on, but it takes time, especially coming from a team like Philadelphia, where that playbook was extremely interesting.
Clay Harbor, Big Pro Football Show every night, 5:30 on the Chicago Sports Network. Before we let you go, who are the Bears taking at 10?
Who are the Bears taking at 10, man? I've been going back and forth on this one.
Or do they move up? Or do they move back? What do they do when they're on the clock?
I think they stay put or they move back. I don't think that they're one player away. I think Ben Johnson realizes that. If Ashton Jeanty is there, they are going to take Ashton Jeanty. If he's not, I think they go with Tyler Warren. They're going to go with a weapon for Ben Johnson, their offensive coach, to put on that offense. I think they're a team that lacks a little bit of skill, and I think Ben Johnson coming there from Detroit notices that. He says, we need more skill. So I think, how do you get more skill? You get a guy like Tyler Warren. You can put on 12 personnel. Let's make the same things look different. Yeah. Let's go 12 personnel. Let's split this guy out in the slot. Let's put him out wide. We can put him at quarterback or center. This guy plays everywhere. It's the same for personnel grouping, but it looks a lot different with Tyler Warren.
Yeah.
And then Jeanty. He's always had his Sonic in his knuckles, his big-time running back that can run between the tackles, break tackles, and he has his DeAndre Swift that can catch passes and run outside. So for those reasons, I'm saying Jeanty or Tyler Warren, and I'd be happy with both.
Great stuff,
Excellent.
Clay.
Great stuff. Great
for being here.
Great to see you, Clay. Appreciate you coming in. And we should let all of our listeners know that Transition on 670 The Score is brought to you by Webb Hyundai in Highland or Merrillville, Indiana. Get the vehicle that you deserve at the payment you want at Webb Hyundai. We'll be right back with Marshall Harris and Layla Rahimi on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.